on this episode of Still Loading, What the Flip? Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I am welcoming back two guests, two friends of the show. They were on this podcast nigh a year ago to talk about feature phone preservation. Feature phones, for those who don't remember, are Japanese flip phones that basically were, I mean, in essence, flip phones. They were a lot more than, they did a lot more than just flip. I promise you that. But there was, they were very big in Japan in the mid to early 2000s before smartphones kind of became a thing. And they did a lot more than what we're used to over here in the States. Their games were a lot more advanced. And so I had the pleasure of speaking with my two guests here a year ago, Naoya Shinoda and Rockman Cosmo, to talk about the state of preserving these games because, you know, it was almost all digital. It was pretty much all digital. Not pretty much. It was all digital software. So there was no physical versions unless you count individual phones that had them installed on there. And all those services are going away. We're going away and are for the most part gone. So unless you have those phones back then, there's no real way to play them. So these two wonderful people have been working over the last year since we last spoke to them to preserve more of these games. So I need to, you know, after that long-winded intro, I should at least introduce my guests here. So Rockman, Naoya, how are you both doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me back on.
I'm doing good as well. Thank you for having me back on.
Thank you for coming back on and setting aside some time for this. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today, but It's been a hell of a year for you guys. You made a whole bunch of podcast appearances besides this one, Tokyo Game Life and Retronauts and probably others that I don't even know of off the top of my head. I know you were on Hit Save prior to mine. And it's just been a crazy year for the show. So I guess before we move on, like, what was one of the big highlights for you guys over the last year? And just in terms of how you, like, what you've been able to do to get the word out there on feature phones?
For me, it really was Retronauts. I think that was probably my favorite opportunity. I mean, it's like every single one of these opportunities that I get to speak about these phones, it's always, I always think it's special. But it was like to get on Retronauts, like a podcast I listened to for so long, it's like it felt so surreal. And I think that just like I was on that and recording it, I could just feel like, yeah, like I think I kind of made it. I think I'm really getting the word out to a ginormous amount of people. And the good thing is after that, like you could see you could see the reward. You could see more people talk about it than ever. And it's like, it's just seeing all these little steps that I took, you know, and the Still Loading podcast last year was another big step for me.
You're being very kind. I don't think it was that big. Retronauts by far is the one that I was so happy to see you guys were able to make it onto that show because I also listened to it. It's one of my favorite podcasts and they have a huge crowd. So I'm so happy that crowd was able to learn more about the feature phones. Nayo, do you have any ones you want to shout out?
Retronauts was really fun. I enjoyed that a lot. I enjoyed just going on the podcasts in general and being able to talk about this subject and just spread the awareness out to as many people as possible.
I love that episode you guys were on. And Nadia is an amazing host. Shout out to Nadia, also a previous guest of Still Loading. She was on my Final Fantasy draft. I actually tried to get her on to our Captain N series that has since wrapped up. It's all over now, but she was going to try to come on, but we couldn't get, our schedules just couldn't align. But anyway, so let's talk about this. So just a, I'm not going to do a full overview of what feature phones are like we did last time. You know, we talked about all the different, you know, service providers and different brands of phones out there. So for those who would like to learn more about this, kind of like the bare bones of it, go check out my episode with Cosmo and Nioya here from last year, which was, I should have probably come prepared with which episode number it was. I'll look that up real quick while I'm talking, but that includes a primer on it. And I guess a real quick overview of it, there is essentially, what was it? There is three different cell phone providers. Wasn't it like, Docomo is a brand. Is Docomo a brand or is it a cell phone provider? I'm blanking on this.
It's a provider.
It's a provider. And then there was like three. You know what? I should have written this all down. I'm so well prepared. I prepared a whole bunch of other questions and none of them had to do with this. I should have prepared a little primer for it. And episode 252 is the episode that these gentlemen were on previously. So my first question for you, after butchering that whole trying to provide a little primer for everyone, it's been a hell of a year for you guys. Like I said, you've been on a bunch of podcasts and you've been able to get the word out and you've made some impressive, crazy strides over the last year. So my first question for you is, what new things have you discovered and achieved since we last spoke just a year ago? There's tons of stuff with games that had previously unfound feature or unknown or not well-known feature phone games. You found a bunch of games from famous series. There's been a whole bunch of stuff. But in your opinion, what has been some of your favorite things that you've discovered and achieved over the past year?
Naya, do you want to go first?
Yeah, just mainly the fact that we were able to figure out a non-destructive method into helping us getting the games off these phones. That's probably one of the biggest highlights.
I could see that. I could see that. I actually took the time, by the way, to write down some of the challenges y'all were facing last year, and I'm gonna kind of not quiz you on it, but read them off and then see what the state of that challenge is now, just 1 year later. But before we get to that, Rockman, over to you. What was one of your favorite things that you guys have achieved / discovered over this past year?
Yeah, I got a similar response to Naya, which is like, we're going to go into it for sure later on, but the debug cable method, the non-destructive way to dump some Docomo phones, that's been a highlight, but also tied with it is also some strides that we've made with SD card decryption, like the games that were once encrypted on there. We've made a lot of progress with that. And it's like how that applies to the Rockman games, which obviously I'll get into later. I think that's just so exciting. And yeah, I also like this thing you're doing where you're going to quiz us. You know, it's kind of a fun way of doing it. It's probably more interesting than us just rambling off for an hour on what's happened.
Well, let's dive right into that then. It's not really like a quiz, I should say. It's more just kind of like, hey, this is what you said last time. How's it going around this time type of thing? So there's only a handful that I was able to find I think we could really sink our teeth into. The first one is, last year, it was very hard to find any type of footage or pictures of the games on feature phone games. Like, you couldn't really find much documentation of anything. You could maybe find some on Nico Video or from a Japanese person on Twitter, but other than that, there was really no way to find any video or picture documentation of the games. How has that changed over the last year?
Well, now that we have gotten the games, we can play them in the SDK emulator that Docomo has, and we could take screenshots from the game, and we can also record video footage of it, and we could get more crisp, clear video footage of it.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. Like, in terms of like finding video out there, I think it's very much the same as it was last year in that regard, where it's like we haven't really found an easier way to find like just old footage of these games. But like, I mean, I know Naya's in the past year met a very kind Japanese Twitter user who happens to have Before Crisis on his phone. He took some like never before seen video of some different kind of attacks and things like that for him. But definitely just now that we know that there's a way to emulate these games, which we'll definitely touch on later in this official Docomo SDK that somehow has an emulator inside of it. But now that we were able to preserve some Docomo games, we're able to plug those into that emulator. And then now we just got the most crisp footage you can ever get, because it's just direct feed. And then, of course, there are also other ways of recording footage off phones themselves if they support AV out or HDMI out. But yeah, I think for sure what he touched on was definitely the biggest advancement they've made in terms of just getting video footage of the games out there.
So essentially, it's interesting where the way you made it sound is that finding footage online, just not from you guys, still very difficult. However, it's been easier than ever to obtain footage because you're able to do it now, which last year you did not have that ability.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Basically. And I guess we did technically have that ability because, as I said, there are some phones that do support video out and HDMI out. But like a year ago, not a lot of us had the right adapters to plug in and record it. But like over the past year, I was crazy enough to get this absolute mess of cables in order to output some of the video from my phones to my computer. And even like about 2 months ago, I did a live stream on YouTube where I streamed myself playing these phone games via OBS. And it was just like,
what?
I should have told you about it, actually. Yeah, you missed it. But I think I screwed up with my mic, though. My mic was really soft and the games were really loud, so you could barely hear me over the gameplay. But that was my first time streaming anything anyway, so I digress. But yeah, that's definitely a way, I think, that I guess, well, both of us, I mean, we knew a lot about Japanese feature phone game preservation last year, but I can definitely say that everybody knows more now than they did a year later. Like probably a year ago, if you asked me how to output video from these phones, I'd tell you I have no idea. So it's like, it's also just an accumulation of knowledge, I think, that's allowed us and other people to do much more with these games.
That's awesome to hear, though. Like it's interesting that you say that you don't know if you've got that much more information on this, but it feels like you have, but just because there's been a lot more breakthroughs. Like I remember a couple of the viral tweets you had specifically with the Devil May Cry one a couple months ago. That might have even been like 6 months ago at the time we're recording this, or like back in the summer. But it seems like you've just found more and more things, but maybe it was only a handful of breakthroughs, but you're able to apply it to a whole bunch of different games now. Is that more accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
All right. So next question from the last episode. You were able to rip games from the micro SD cards, but they were encrypted. And encryption, at the time you spoke to someone who said the encryption was going to take longer to decrypt than the heat death of the universe. What is the state of that now? Because obviously some breakthrough had to have occurred, because you mentioned already before, there is a way to rip these games from the phones without damaging the phones and now without like breaking anything.
Well, one day someone joined our Discord, and this was around a year ago, and they told us that they had firmware dumps of Docomo, of a Docomo phone, the P-01F. And at the time, that was unbelievably rare, because no one has been able to get a single firmware from any of these phones. And then on this person's blog, looking at it, and he shows a picture from the USB from a UART manual that Docomo provides. And he was saying how if you modify some parts of the cable, you can put it in Panasonic, IPL, OMAP, OBEX mode. And I just thought to myself, wait, what is this? And everyone got really curious about this. And then so everyone started tinkering with it. We started asking questions. And what happens is we took some pins on a FOMA micro USB cable. Depending on how many pins are on it, you either short pins 4 or 5 or 8 through 10 on your USB cable, and you insert it into your phone without the battery inserted, and your phone will boot into test mode.
Okay. And why does booting into test mode help? Is that how you're able to dump things?
Mm-hmm. Yes. With this and a script called KT Dumper, we are able to read the file the file system when we're and we're able to dump the contents of the phone.
Mm. So by that method and opening up the test mode, that was able to pretty much open the floodgates for a lot of the stuff you were able to do throughout this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Yes. And also it's like it's not compatible with every single Docomo phone. It's only really compatible with NEC and Panasonic phones. And even then, not all of those phones are compatible. It really I think it depends on the specific, like if it supports that kind of test mode, which like now that KT Dumper tool supports, like it supports most Panasonic phones, which is crazy. Like that's a lot of phones, you know, but it's like each of these phones uses different types of file systems. So it's like, even if you use this cable, this debug cable, as we call it, and we rip the file system off the phone, some file systems are harder to read than others. So then it's like, okay, we got this mess, but now we have to find a way to read some of these file systems. And some of them are pretty hard. Like, for example, we'll probably get into some of the games that were preserved with this method, but there's like, for example, one of the games that was, one of the phones that was dumped by me, weirdly, because like I don't really have like a ton of hands-on experience with dumping phones, but for the first time with this method, one of our kind team members, named Ellen RC, she was able to send me a custom modified debug cable, and I happen to have a P01A phone, which has the Kingdom Hearts coded Olympus Coliseum demo preloaded on there. Okay. So basically, the guy's name who develops that KT Dumper script, his name is literally XYZ. he's like, oh, you know, you should try dumping the P01A, and like, I'll give you the command to do it, and you just go and do it. So I did it took me forever to get this set up on my laptop. I had to get like Ubuntu on there, get Linux on there. There are tons of problems with that, getting Linux on my computer. But after all of that headache, I was able to run the script, and yeah, I was able to just dump the file system of that phone. So technically, I preserved the Kingdom Hearts coded demo. But as of the recording of this video, they're still trying to figure out the file system on this P01A, because apparently it's just, yeah, it's very strange. It's like they got like a bunch of they got a flash translation layer and two different chips, and that the data split between there. So it's like, even with this method, it's not like, oh, all right, I plug in a cable and then, you know, all the data is there. There's still more work to be done, but this, as we'll see, is a big step forward in things. So that was like, I guess, the non-destructive way, that method. But you were also asking about like the SD encryption, right? Mm-hmm. Like the games that are encrypted.
Yep. Did you find a way around that?
Yeah, I'm happy to say that we are closer than ever now to decrypting these iMode games on SD cards. So I did say Heat Death of the Universe. that turns out I was wrong, very wrong. Because, so let's see, let me back up and describe what goes into these SD cards again. So what happens is, on some of these devices, you can move games to a micro SD card, and you gotta have a UIM, or basically just it's like a SIM card basically, and you have to have that in there in order to move it. So you got the SIM card in there, you move the game to the micro SD, assuming that you can even move things to a micro SD. Some phones don't have that functionality for some reason, but basically, once you have the file on there and you plug into a computer, you can't just get the files. They're encrypted by a C2 cryptomeric cipher and CPRM. So you got to have three things to crack it. And I did say like three things last year, and it turns out that I was kind of describing, I don't know, I didn't see the full picture of decrypting these things, because we never really got past this first roadblock that I'll talk about. But now that I have, you know, I guess more knowledge on this, I can now accurately say that the main three things you want is an S-box, a device key, and a bind ID. So we already got the S-box about 2 years ago. A person found it, weirdly enough, on a Japanese Samsung Galaxy S2. I guess this is a common thing that's universal, and it's been used on basically any kind of device that has this kind of CPRM kind of just copyright protection. But the next thing we need is a device key. And a device key, it can come from a phone, like a firmware dump, but it's also universal. So we were really trying to find a way to get this device key for the longest time. I think that was the thing that the professor told me to take heed death of the universe, like, because you got to brute force that thing, you know. But it turns out that it can be brute forced. And throughout the summer, we were all thinking, like, all right, this is going to take a pretty long time to brute force, probably. So it's like who's going to do it? Can we do it at all? And like, we were thinking of making like a collective brute forcing effort where you got like one Java server and then everyone lends their processing power to it. But that never really materialized. So then on September 26th, one of our team members, his name's Good Tofu Friday. He just said, all right, you guys, you know what? I'm going to one man it myself. And you're just like, we're like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I got an AMD Radeon RX 7900 XTX. That's pretty powerful. And yeah, he's like, I'm just make the tool and I'm going to do it for you. So that's what happened. He brute forced 34 billion keys a second. And 20 days later, he got a key.
Wow.
And this was massive because, like, this is a huge, I mean, this is like, what is it? Now we got two out of the three things, you know? And it was also nerve wracking while he's brute forcing it, because it's like it gave you an ETA, the tool gave you an ETA, and it was like, how many days left, how many keys left and whatever. And it shows like the whole whatever thing, and his computer has to be on for the entire time as well. And like, because this is kind of a rudimentary tool, there was no like saving. So basically, like, if something crashed, you just have to know exactly what key you stopped on. So that's what happened.
Geez.
Is his computer froze. But luckily, what he did was he made a Twitch stream, and he streamed that program to Twitch. So basically, if it crashed, you could see when it was last there, and you could restart it. But that happened like twice. One time it crashed because it was just too much of the computer. I think it was after like 5 days. And then another time he wanted to play, I think, Cyberpunk, so he stopped it. But he knew where he stopped it, and they started again. But basically, as time went on, I think the overall ETA was about 30 days. So we're at like 20 days, you know? And then like the guy who helped develop it for us, team member, his name is, he goes by BinCat on Discord, but other places he's called username AK. But basically he just says, oh, well, I kind of skimped on a few things, you know, to make the tool faster. So it may not actually find a key. There's a chance it might not, you know. And there's also a chance that when you restarted the tool, you might be like a couple keys off and you skip like 34 billion keys or something.
Oh, no.
So then, of course, like all of us are just kind of like, oh, no. Like, are you serious? Like, we're 20 days in. You know, this guy's computer's been on for 20 days straight and we might not find a key. And all of a sudden, he sends a picture and he's like, hey guys, the tool stopped. At the very bottom it says found key colon, and then it has like the key printed. And that was just, that was huge, because yeah, this device ID, I mean, sorry, not device ID, device key can be used across any dump. This is not like specific to one dump. So
now
we're on the next step, which is the bind ID. And this, we're not really sure how this is generated, but one of our people are theorizing that it was generated by the SIM card in the game, making it not universal, which means that there's a different bind ID for every game, or a bind ID that's exclusive to just, you know, the SD card itself.
Yeah.
So that worried us for a second, because we're like, okay, we got SD dumps of Rockman Dash 5 Islands and Kingdom Hearts coded, but we don't have the SIM cards for those. So are we screwed? Well, it turns out that no, we're not, because the bind ID can be brute forced. And the crazy thing is, it will take a shorter amount of time than the device key. So this is where we are at right now, where this username AK, he is currently, well, slowly but surely, because as we'll discuss later, the other things that we're also focusing on, but it's like, he's going to make a tool that's going to help us brute force this. And I don't know, by the time this releases, it'll happen, but we're going to try testing it on the Rockman Dash 5 Islands dump. And the crazy thing is, when we were able to apply the device key and make a more complete dump of that SD card, we discovered that there were other Rockman games on there. It was not just 5 Islands. So we got Rockman Tennis. That's a game I've always wanted, because come on, you know, I want to play tennis as Mega Man. Who doesn't? I think there's about 5 other games on that card, other like Mega Man mini games. But basically, like, once we brute force a bind ID from that, we would have done it. We would have decrypted a game for the first time off an SD card, and then we will tried doing that to the Kingdom Hearts Coda Dumb, brute force that. Now, of course, I'm saying I'm throwing around brute force like it's nothing, but obviously that takes like computing power and someone's GPU. And like one of our team members did buy like a crypto mining like setup. Like, it was like a yard sale or something. It only cost like $200, but it was like a couple like GPUs there together. And it's like, she was like, yeah, I'll lend this to you guys, you know, if you want to brute force this anytime soon. So we're all set. It's just a matter of that tool being written by this user. But yeah, that's really exciting because last year I was like, I don't know what to do with these encrypted dumbs. You know, we have work to do. But now I can just say, yeah, we're literally one step away from decrypting these dumps. And hopefully when they're decrypted, they're not fragmented data. But from what we can see when we use a device key on these dumps, we're starting to see names of the games and other little fragments of data, which means that there might just be full game files under this encryption. So yeah,
that's
really
amazing.
Really exciting.
And then once those game files are decrypted, you can dump them online, and assuming you'd be able to put them on like emulators and stuff, if there is an emulator for the different phones and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's amazing. You kind of answered one of these last two I have here. One is you have to find a way to dump the phone's firmware to break the last layer of encryption, which you kind of spent the last little bit talking about, both you and Nioya. You talked about putting the phone into test mode and you're able to dump it. So the firmware was able to be dumped. And then you mentioned everything about the encryption here. So that all has been answered already. The last one I have is that some phones need to be connected to 3G to connect to Wi-Fi. Is there still issues with that involving the preservation? I forget exactly the context in which that was, but is that still an ongoing issue?
So that is specifically only just for the 945SH. If you do have a Docomo Wi-Fi phone, you could still use Wi-Fi, at least to my knowledge, without any restrictions. The only thing it'll restrict you from doing is downloading iAppli or using the iMode web browser. But other than that, the phones like N906IL, CA01C, the Docomo phones that have Wi-Fi can use Wi-Fi so long as you connect to a Wi-Fi network and no SIM cards.
I think isn't the 3G thing only for SoftBank phones, Naya?
Yeah. I can't speak for AU. I know there is one AU phone that does use Wi-Fi, but I haven't looked into that.
Okay. So you mentioned at the beginning of that only is it one specific phone that has that issue? You mentioned a bunch of letters and numbers. I wasn't quite sure what you're. I'm assuming that's a specific like model of phone.
For the 3G Wi-Fi phone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the 945SH, I believe. I want to say that's the Gundam phone.
Okay, so it's a specific, but it's a specific phone model.
Yeah.
Is what that? Oh, okay. Yeah.
But however, yeah. SoftBank is the joke around is that people like to call it LockBank because if you try to access the games on a SoftBank phone, you can't get to the games unless you have a 3G connection.
And that's the issue that you're still running into.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We can't really get around the 3G stuff, but it's like but that's only for launching the games. Like when you're trying to dump a SoftBank phone, like that doesn't. Once you have the files off the phone, like that restriction is no longer in place.
Okay, so that's handy to know. So those are all the notes that I took from your previous appearance over like issues that you were facing, and it's kind of cool to look back. I kind of wanted to do this for two reasons. One, for my longtime listeners to listen to that episode to see where it's been, but also kind of for you guys. The first one, finding footage, it's technically easier. Like I would say that's not 100% solved, but it is more solved because you guys have the ability now to dump the video and pictures yourselves, which you really didn't have an easy way to do that for the vast majority. Like you said before, Cosmo, a few of the phones had like video out, but for the most part, that was still an issue. The games ripped from the micro SDs were encrypted. That has almost been fixed. Like that is the three layers of encryption. You figured out two and you're almost done the third, which is awesome to see. And then the phone's firmware, that's also been fixed with the whole debug method. And then also the whole 3G connect to Wi-Fi, that has also been fixed because once you're able to dump them, it gets rid of that whole issue. So I think it's kind of cool to look back. If you think about it, guys, like, these were your biggest problems just a year ago and how much of them you have already solved. So I wanted to kind of highlight that at the beginning before we talk about what's going on currently and what the plan for the future is, type of thing. So I wanted to, you know, we got to look at where we've been, and it's awesome to see how much of that has changed since then. So currently, let's move on with this. Some of the achievements you have done this year, what are some of the highlights in terms of, you know, games that you've been able to dump? What are some big things that you've been able to get accomplished this year that you really want to highlight for my listeners? I guess to start off, we'll start off with you, Cosmo, and then we'll go with you, Nioya.
Oh, let's see. There are a lot of, like, I if you're referring to like games that have been like preserved, like,
yes,
with this. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm gonna save the big hitter for Nioya, because I think he definitely wants to speak about that one. So I will go on the, I'm not gonna say it's lesser, it's not lesser really, but like Final Fantasy IV, the After Years, like, mm-hmm. The demo of that was preserved off of a, I think it was off of, what was it? I think it was a P903 iPhone, and that is not preloaded. Like, basically someone had like a, well, maybe I did not touch on this last year, but like the other way to get like paid games on these phones, because as you've already said, all the storefronts are already shut down, so you can't really buy and download these games anymore. You gotta basically find a phone that already has these paid games downloaded on them. And the easiest way of doing that is to just spend like $1,000 and go on like an auction site where some Japanese users are like, okay, I'm gonna sell 500 phones all in this giant bin. I've never tested any of them, but go get them. So,
oh geez,
that's what. So that's what one of our team members did. That guy who brute forced the device key for us, Good Tofu Friday. That's what he did like a year and a half ago. He spent $1,000 and he got like 400 phones, like not just Docomo phones, just like any of those carriers basically. And on one of his phones, it turns out, this user had the demo for Final Fantasy IV: The After Years, which is like a, I'm not very familiar with Final Fantasy IV lore. I think it's a prequel to it.
Something like
that. But that was exclusive to these phones before it got re-released on WiiWare, which, well, now WiiWare is not around anymore. So But it's called Final Fantasy IV: The After. Like, that, there is no years on there. I guess this is from a version before they added like the full title, because it's like The After, and it has some kind of a Japanese text afterwards. But yeah, so that is like, it's only the first chapter of it. It's not very long, but that's like, that's a paid game right there, you know? And mm-hmm. It's like that was preserved. And then I guess another game that was preserved in a very strange fashion, but it still made history. But before like this whole debug cable method became a thing, there was this game made by Gmode, and Gmode was a company that made a lot of these Japanese feature phone games. And nowadays they're doing their own re-releases, like Unity recreations of these games on the Switch and Steam, called Gmode Archives. Mm. And they made this game in 2004, an RPG, and it's called Fly Height Claudia. And basically they've already re-released this for Switch and everything, so it's not like it's lost at all, but it did become the first ever commercial Docomo iMode game that was preserved. And the way it was preserved was very strange. So basically, in 2011, they re-released this as part of Gmode Archives. But the weird thing is, this is a very early version like of the Gmode Archives. So it was on Android. And for some reason, this re-release all the way back then, 2011, it had the Java game files in a Docomo, like an iAppli runtime, like just inside the Android app for some reason.
Hmm.
And the Java file for the game was in a very, very optimized format. So then team member username AK, he converted the Java file back to normal bytecode, which made it playable. And basically that was like the first time that like a non-pre-installed, just like a paid game, you know, a Docomo paid game had ever been saved, you know. But wasn't really the original game file from a phone, though. It was more just like a, you know, a Docomo Java file. But for some reason, it just slapped inside an Android re-release of the game. Very strange, but this set the stage basically for future Japanese feature phone game preservation developments. You know, and that was also a big highlight because it was like, whoa, you know, like even though it's not an original file from a phone, that's still a paid game right there that now we've got saved. What could happen? And well, I guess Naya, go ahead. Tell them the big hitter that got preserved last month.
Dirge of Kerberos Lost Episode, Final Fantasy VII, one of the well-known lost Final Fantasy VII games got dumped recently. And it's so far, it's only chapters 1 to 5, I believe. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was dumped from a P903i, but it got preserved, and getting it to work was hard. That was really difficult. And that took a lot of effort from the people in the Copybreak Discord to get that to run, because the company who developed it, IdeaWorks 3D, when they were developing the Dojo version, originally it was not meant for Japan. It was meant to only be an overseas game, but they eventually released mm-hmm. it to Japan. And so I spoke with someone who actually worked alongside during the time of Dirge of Kerberos Lost Episode and before Crisis, when it was supposed to come to the West. And that game cost a lot to develop. But that game was interesting. Dirge of Kerberos Lost Episode, the Dojo version, it has these certain amount of images that the computer will detect as GIF files, but they're the, what are they? They're the, file systems for Dirge of Kerberos.
Okay.
And so,
oh,
we had to run the game from a command line to get it to work. So you can launch games from the Dojima emulator through command line, and same with building. Mm-hmm. And so, but you could do it through a command line, like c/dojo.exe. And you had to do this very long command line just to get it to bypass all that stuff. Because then it would just get stuck in this loop of please select image file 1, image file 5, and stuff. And that took a long time to get running.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, when it's requesting those image files, it's like, when this, the way the game was made, it was the reason why I was requesting them, because this Doja, which stands for Docomo Java, since this profile has a limit of 1 megabyte. So what these guys did to squeeze more data in there, they used .gif files and they used steganography to put game files inside the invisible .gif files and then read off the game files from there. So they had to dig those wow. out from the phone's file system.
That's as like crazy to me. It's like, it reminds me of when you would see, if you look at like some old retro games that would appear on cassette tape, where you're just seeing game files and things, you're like, wait, you can play it, you can have a game that way. The fact that they stored game data on image files, right? I'm not mishearing that. I'm not misunderstanding that. It's essentially, the computers read it as JPEG or GIF files, but in actuality, it's game code.
I believe so.
That I'm sorry, that's just fucking nuts. That is like one of the most wild things I think I've ever heard of. It's crazy what developers can do. It's absolutely bonkers. That that's amazing. Okay, so. Those are some amazing achievements that you guys have been able to get through or get done over the course of this year. Since hopping on so many podcasts, you know, between mine, between Retronauts, and between Tokyo Game Live, all the ones I mentioned before, how much growth have you seen in the community, for your community, like in the people assisting you in feature phone preservation? Has there been a huge spike since all of this, or has it been more steady growth? Like, how much has it grown?
Oh, Naya, if you want to go first, go ahead.
We've been slowly getting more and more people helping in terms of the technical side, but in terms of the phones now, more and more people are starting to buy phones as well.
Okay, so even the people who aren't maybe technically savvy, they're able to still help by buying phones and then like sending them places for them to get decrypted or like dumped and whatnot.
They asked about the cable And then we have to show them what do you have to do to the cable so that they can get an idea. And the sad thing is the USB adapter that we recommend, that one is from, you could get that one from either Amazon or eBay, and that one takes like about 2 to 4 weeks to get.
Ooh.
Yeah, so because we know someone who does have the full purchase version of Dirge Kirby's Lost Episode, they're just waiting for the adapter to come in mail, but that'll be interesting to see, because I don't know if that is the full voice version, because Dirge Kirby's Lost Episode had a voice version.
Wait, so there's one version of the game with voices on the phone and one without?
Yeah, because the demo is just chapters 1 to 5, and then the full version does have voice. You can find it on YouTube.
Okay. What are some new challenges that you're currently facing? You know, what are some things that you guys have going on that you still are seeking assistance with?
So for Doja games, the Dotemu Java games, we can actually decompile them very easily with programs like IntelliJ and JDGUI. Basically, we can view the source code of the games.
Mm.
And so, but the problem is they take use of the scratch pad. And I know someone in our Discord, Sir, knows how to extract content or files from the scratch pad.
Ooh, sorry, real quick. What's the scratch pad?
Scratchpad is this thing that Dokimon has. It's like this special type of file that the game creates. It's like a record manager for JTME, save data, basically. And
okay,
you just store data in there. And to my knowledge, there really isn't any external program out there that I've found to be able to read from that. But that's where, like, so for example, if you get the Doja games, there's like there's a jar file that's the actual game itself. There's the jam file. The jam file is what the phone looks for. And it looks for the information. It says, okay, this is a P903i game. This has this much scratch pad and other information. It's like a ADF file. And then scratch pad, it's like a save data. And that's where sometimes the images and music is. For example, the Final Fantasy 1 game, all the images and music, it's in that Scratchpad file for the Doja version.
Okay, so Scratchpad is just like a digital holding place for different data in games.
Yeah.
Okay. Cosmo, what about you? Any big challenges that you see that you're currently facing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Naya, touched on a good one. And then also for just like that debug cable method, like that's really opened up like a lot of doors. But at the same time, it's like some of these file systems are really hard to read. Like I already talked about the P01A, and then now like we're currently dealing with the P06C. And
these are all phone models, right? The P01A. These are all phone models.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I apologize for throwing out so many phone model names. It's like once you're in a flip phone purgatory, you can't really get out. So once you know the phone names, they just kind of become part of your vocabulary.
Maybe I should call this episode Flip Phone Purgatory. I'm just kidding. This is a good time. That's an evocative title. That's why I thought of it. Sorry, continue.
So basically the flash translation layer is this thing on the phone called FSR. The funniest thing is like, I mean, if you look up FSR, you don't get anything on it, like nothing. It's like it's so specific, you know, to these kinds of phones that it's hard to find anything about it out there. So right now, users are working on just trying to figure stuff out with that. But that's not easy. And then there are other types of flash translation layers called XSR2. That's also it's also hard to get through. So it's like of course, we need more assistance with that. But aside from the debug cable method, like SoftBank phones are facing really the same difficulties as like what Docomo phones had before, because like with this debug cable method, a few SoftBank phones can work with it because those select few are built just like their Docomo counterparts, but like there are other SoftBank phones that don't have the same kind of internals. So this despite using this exact same kind of connector that the Docomo phones use, they can't be booted into test mode, which means that there have to be other ways into, I guess, either just reading their chips or finding a software exploit. And I guess, speaking of software exploits, that's probably where, like, the most, I guess, potential lies, but there hasn't really been a lot of, I guess, people looking into it. And that makes sense because there aren't, this community is very small anyways. And basically what these software exploits can do is just, you can develop something that can be used across many phones that all share something. And one thing that a lot of these phones share is a web browser. And this browser is a net front browser. And this specific type of browser has been exploited on Nintendo DS, 3DS, PSP, Vita.
Okay.
And it's like, this is super viable because this version of NetFront is older than the ones that are used on the handhelds. Way older, which means it's way more vulnerable. So basically, if someone could find an exploit for that browser, it could be used across a lot of phones, especially phones that can't be dumped with the debug cable as of now. And there's even the user LNRC, she even found an email draft exploit, which is crazy. So basically, she was tinkering around with our SH10C phone, which is the phone that has the full versions of the Mega Man Battle Network games on it. And okay. She's looking at the email draft, and she noticed, wait a minute, the file attachments for email drafts are encoded in Base64, which means that someone could load in a custom Base64 file via an SD card or, hell, even via infrared. Yes, these phones could transfer data via infrared. And then you could paste that onto an email draft. And basically what this custom file could do is it could make them, it could do a lot of things. Like, for example, if you code it in a certain way, you can transfer a file, a photo or like a custom image. And that image would be encoded in that Base64. And then once it gets onto the email draft, boop, there you go. You got your custom image that's just been loaded onto the phone. And that's been proven to work. But what she thinks is, what if you can load in a custom bookmark? Because you can also transfer in bookmarks. And what if that bookmark could trick the phone into showing its file system through a custom URL? So basically, it's kind of like you're exploiting the browser. But yeah, so it's very murky. And the thing is, like, I think she tried it once and ended up crashing the browser. So that's a good sign. But then one of the team members pointed out, that's good and all, but we don't know how the file system works on these Sharp phones yet. So even if we did find a way for the phone to show its file system, we wouldn't even know where to go. We'd be groping in the dark. So it's like, that's also another issue that has to be figured out. So it's like, these are very good transitions here. Yes. And the other issue is Sharp phones as well. Sharp phones and Fujitsu phones, they're not really compatible with this debug cable method because like everything inside them is very proprietary. And the crazy thing is like, if you were recording this yesterday, I'd be saying, oh man, you know, Sharp phones, you know, it's kind of it's a problem. But now we have made some progress with Sharp phones literally yesterday. Like, it's so weird. But basically, what that same user, LNRC, she has an SH03E phone, and that has an eMMC chip, which is not a flash chip, but something that's different than a flash chip, which means that she was able to take off the chip from that phone and use a special kind of chip programmer that's compatible with that kind of a chip, and she was able to read it, which means that that firmware of that one Sharp phone has been dumped for the first time ever. So that means that a Sharp phone's file system is now accessible and for the first time. And now as we speak, as we're recording this, people are looking into how are we supposed to read this thing because it's a custom file system and it's compressed. So it's like we never dealt with anything like that before. But if they're able to figure that out, there's a chance that other Sharp phones with this exact same kind of weird Ooga Booga custom file system, you know, maybe a specific software exploit can be done on those. And that's not even talking about Fujitsu phones, which apparently are just as hard as Sharp phones. They're just only so many people that can look into these things at once. So yeah, it's really a matter of that. And that's why it's always good to have more technically minded people.
It really seems like the biggest issue that I see that you guys are facing is just the sheer amount of non-standardization across all of these phones. Like the things that you guys have been listing off this whole time is just different phone models over and over and over again. And each one is presenting with a very unique and individual issue and issue and problem. And that debug cable method that we've been talking about, it was great, like you said, because it for the vast majority of Docomo phones, right? That's what it was good for?
Mm-hmm.
For Panasonic and, for some Panasonic Docomo phones and a few NEC phones, Docomo phones.
So
but yeah,
that, still that limited to method Docomo. Did... But so that did it for all those, and only the service provider Docomo. That's don't get me wrong, huge milestone. But the fact that you can still find all of these examples of other things that are going to take so much more effort because they're so niche and so hyper specific is just wild to me. Like there is just I can't even imagine what you're having to do. But yeah, Rockman, you mentioned off mic that there was something specifically you wanted to talk about the Rockman series and feature phones, just about some of the big steps that you've made with that. So dive into that a little bit. What would you like to discuss about it?
Yeah, so hopefully by the time this episode is out, the big thing will have happened. But if not, I guess it's just a good way of just seeing where we're at this moment and where we currently are. It has not happened yet. But basically, I'd already mentioned that we had Rockman Dash, Great Adventure on Five Islands on an SD card, along with Rockman Tennis and a couple other games. But we are so hyper fixated on that SD card that we totally forgot that there was a phone that went along with it. And that phone is a Panasonic P06C. And this P06C, it turns out, has Rockman games on its internal storage. And from what I know, the phone came preloaded with a demo of Mega Man 1, but it also, the internal storage of this phone also apparently has a racing game, Rockman GP. It's like a very rudimentary minigame racing game. But most notably, it has the demos of the two Mega Man Battle Network games. So basically, like, now on mm-hmm. one phone, the Sharp phone, we have the full versions of each game, every single chapter. And now on this Panasonic phone, we have the demos, the first chapters for each of those games. And the crazy thing is, at a stroke of luck, when we discovered this, the XYZ is doing the debug cable method, and he's developing his KT Dumper script. And it turns out that the P06C is compatible with that script. So the team member, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, good Tofu Friday, it's always him, he has the phone, and he successfully dumped the entirety of that phone. So now, as we speak, we have in a sense preserved those lost Mega Man games for the very first time. And hopefully by the time this episode releases, right now as we're speaking, like the team member username AK, he is trying his best to read this this file system and the flash translation layer on there. Apparently his tool that is used to read this file system, it already worked for one of our team members' dumps of a P06C that had no games, but for some reason our dump with the games is not working with the tool, which means that his tool only needs a few more minor adjustments, hopefully. And if that all works out and he were able to read that phone's file system, well, folks, we would have saved three or four lost Mega Man games, including the big demos of the two big hitters, which are the Mega Man Battle Network games. So that's extremely exciting. And hopefully by whenever this episode comes out, that announcement would have already hit the airwaves and everyone's all talking about it. But if not, well, you heard it first here. But yeah, extremely exciting.
It's on the way
stuff,
at the very least.
Yeah, and that'll be huge.
Hey everyone, Future Josh here. At the time we recorded this, everything Cosmos said there had not been dumped and preserved, but since this recording, it's been crazy what they've been able to do. The following games they've been able to dump and preserve: Rockman.exe Phantom of Network, the entire game; Rockman Dash Great Adventure on Five Islands, and it had, including the fifth chapter, which was actually found in the phone's deleted files; Rockman Pinball, Rockman Panic Fire, Rockman GP, Rockman Bug Sweeper, Rockman 1. It was a demo version, but it was hacked to reveal that it's a full game behind a paywall. And then also Rockman Tennis, the first ever iMode game to be decrypted off an SD card. So that is a major advancement, and I wanted to shout it out here that they were able to do it. If you want to learn more, go check out Rockman Cosmo's Twitter account, at Rockman Cosmo over there on Twitter /X/whatever. Anyway, back to previous Josh and Cosmo and Nioya. And in speaking of some of your goals, like you're hoping to have this, you know, this major breakthrough in Rockman preservation by the time this episode comes out, what are some other milestones that you are both looking to hit within the next year? Nioya, let's start over with you. What are some milestones that you would like to personally see happen over the next year? Who knows, maybe we'll do another check-in in another year and see how things are going, but until then, what are some milestones you'd like to see?
In terms of games, it'd be nice to see if Before Crisis gets dumped, as well as
that's what you've been pushing for a while.
And snowboarding, because a lot of people in the live stream joke about how they really want to play that game on a cell phone. And on the hardware side, I hope that at least sideloading could be made a possibility. As much as I'm all for, you know, making emulators for the Android and whatnot, I still think it'd be a very neat experience to be able to sideload the games on these Docomo phones, mainly the P900 IV or these ones where Panasonic just made the landscape phones. They're just really cool. I like them. That, and I hope that the rest of the Docomo phones can get dumped, as well as SoftBank.
I mean, that would be like that if you can dump the rest of the phone. I mean, but that's also one service provider. Lost the thread. What are the other two service providers again, by the way, after Docomo?
There is AU, which has EasyWeb, and then there's SoftBank that has Yahoo Keitai.
That's what it was. Okay. Rockman, what about you? What are some milestones that you would like to see hit within the next year?
Well, definitely saving some Mega Man games. It's in my name, Rockman. But yeah, I really, really want to see those saved once and for all. Our team's been working so hard on them for so long. It's just like, I feel like we are close. Like, I've already mentioned the demos, right, on that Panasonic phone, but just with Five mm-hmm. Islands as well, like, we are so close. Like, we spent so long. I mean, that this project started, what? It was like, I think it was December 30th, 2020, I think, is when this whole project started. And it's like, I mean, I could just really see how breaking through Five Islands, getting that decrypted, and then as an extension, I want to see these other games on SD cards get decrypted, and then also finally see some breakthroughs with Sharp phones, because it's not just like the Mega Man Battle Network games are on the Sharp phones. The Sharp phones probably had the best preloaded games because they were the most, I'm using fancy in relative terms, but they had really nice hardware inside. Proprietary, yes, but it's a pretty nice games. Like that Devil May Cry game that I showed, that was only on that was made for a Sharp phone. Or Monster Hunter for SH, that was also made for a Sharp phone. Or even Lost Planet. Like, these are all 3D games that Capcom made, and they were really just preloaded on these Sharp phones. And it's like, if we can find a way to dump a bunch of Sharp phones, like, we got the P903i that's dumpable. What about the SH903i? Because that one has Monster Hunter for SH preloaded on there. It's a full game, although it does require internet connection for switching weapons. But still, it's like... What? Yeah, what? That's the bullcrap part. Yeah, like I was playing the game, and basically it's a mission based game, but it gets really hard by like the second tier, and it's like I gotta get a new weapon. So I spend 3,000 zenny on a new weapon. Right, you can spend the in game currency to get the weapon, but then to switch the weapon, you need network communication. Like, why? I'm switching a weapon. Come on, guys.
Okay, I'm not even going to try to understand that. It's almost like bizarre DRM, where it's like, oh, you're not connected online, so if clearly you're stealing this. We're setting our phones to steal here.
Exactly. What a weird
thing. So now that we've covered the milestones, where do you see this project going forward? Like, what do you see in the future for this? Like, realistically, can we talk about what your pie in the sky, maybe not pie in the sky, but like objectives and goals are, but where do you realistically see what you're going to be able to do? Even not going to say the whole next year, because I bet you if you would have talked to yourselves last year when we first chatted, I don't know if you would have predicted everything that you've been able to do in this year. What, am I correct in that assumption? Like, I feel like there's a lot more that happened this year than you were expecting to happen.
Totally, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you see this preservation of, effort going forward? Like, what are some things you want to focus on, actually? Like, you talk about some milestones that you want to hit, but what is your focus going forward? Are you trying to preserve games from a specific series, or are you looking more for to try to dump as many different types of phone firmware as possible over the next year? So, like, where do you see this going forward?
What I'm personally aiming for, obviously, is the Lost Final Fantasy 7 games. But if I could get my hands on any Lost games and be able to dump them, I'll do so as well. It would be nice to get Before Crisis, even though it is a network game, to turn off its network features and to be able to at least make whatever content of it that is in there playable for everyone so that they can experience a little bit of the original Before Crisis.
You know what? You bringing that up reminded me of something. I saw on Twitter you were actually able to interact with someone who worked on some of these games, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did anything come of that you're able to speak of? I mean, I'm assuming some of it's not. Yeah, like what type of stuff were you able to find out?
So I found out that the Before Crisis Final Fantasy 7 game that is on my W51H, the demo, was the same one that was apparently shown at E3 2006. I had no idea the game was shown. And another thing too is Dirge of Kerberos Lost episode. That game's failure, I found out that it was what stopped Square Enix from releasing Before Crisis overseas. So, because, you know, I think that showed right there, okay, no one overseas cares about it as much. And I even asked that person, I said, so what network would that even go on? And he said, at the time, Verizon was the best company that could handle Before Crisis. And for some context, Before Crisis continuously downloads data over and over again. Despite its 2D simplistic looking design, it does download data constantly.
Interesting. So it would have required a phone network or a phone provider or service provider with really good internet connectivity or really good, I guess, like infrastructure to handle that type of phone or that type of usage, which famously the U.S. is not really known for its good internet infrastructure. It's not the worst compared to countries that may not have good, like absolutely abysmal infrastructure, but like comparatively, especially to like countries like Korea and stuff, we are woefully behind. So I'm not surprised that if you have a game that's so heavily dependent on that, and don't get me wrong, Verizon's huge, but like it's that you're really limiting yourself if you can only get it on Verizon, you know?
And for Brew phones only. So Brew phones on Verizon, so that's still limiting the number of phones you could play it on.
Yeah, just to quickly chime in, yeah, Brew is a different platform than Java. Mm-hmm. And most of these, like most of the games that we're talking about, right, like Docomo Java or SoftBank games are closer to base Java, but the EasyWeb games, the AU, that service provider, they initially had like Java games for like 2 years, but then in 2004 they switched to Brew, the Brew platform. So that's why, like, yeah, they're there, but it's like when we talk about emulating like Docomo games and stuff, like they're a totally separate mess because, you know, they're not even Java. It's a whole separate platform that was developed by Qualcomm.
Correct me if I'm wrong on here, but I recall seeing a video on YouTube of a Rockman Phantom of the Network demo that was on one of the AU phones, and I believe it to be a Easy Apply Java
phone. Yes, yeah, because okay. I think a lot of actually the Mega Man games were also released for the Easy Web Service, so it makes sense that it'd be on one of those phones.
Because the Easy Apply, those ones, the Java, they're just basically MIDP, either 1.0, 2.0, which is basically what J2ME uses. However, they have some, you know, special AU API. I wouldn't be surprised. But basically, what I'm getting at is that you, if one gets that, J2ME Loader does emulate KJX games, which is the file format for AU phones, and but for some resolution games. And so basically, if you get that, you can easily emulate that on your on J2ME Loader with some modification. It'd be easier to emulate than brew.
Yes, yeah, and actually that brings us to a good point, because I think there's one thing that we didn't touch on before, which is a challenge, a continuing challenge, and that's emulation.
Ooh.
That's still a big issue that we're facing right now. It's like we did touch on this thing called the Doja 5.1 SDK. And some, I don't know who found it. Maybe now I can say who found it. I forgot who did it, but they found an official SDK that Docomo did for Docomo Java app, like development, iApply development, and it has an emulator inside of it. So like all these new game dumps, we've been using it to test, but it kind of sucks. It's not very good with 3D games. Like Georgia Cerberus kind of runs like trash sometimes on it. And then even with 2D games, it has performance issues and has some sound problems. And like getting the emulator to run in the first place is really hard. Like it's just, you got to set up directories. And it's like for the average user, it's very convoluted. And also you have to modify the games. There's a user named Memory Hunter. And what he has to do with every single game dump is he has to like separate the jar, the jam, and the scratchpad files, and you have to put them in there in a certain way. So yeah, that's pretty convoluted. And then for SoftBank games, luckily emulation is a bit better. As Naya just mentioned, there's something called J2ME Loader, which is compatible with all these Java Micro Edition games. And since SoftBank is closer to base Java Micro Edition compared to the Docomo games, they're able to be emulated on that Android emulator. And then another user recently discovered that SoftBank also had a development SDK for its apps. And while most of that's gone, they had an emulator inside of it called the Mexa emulator, M-E-X-A. It's super weird, but that can also run some SoftBank games with some exceptions. But the biggest problem is emulating those Easy Web games, the ones that are on the Brew platform specifically, because there is only a single emulator for that out there. And it's developed by one person, username AK. He's the guy that helped develop the tool for brute forcing, the device key, and the one doing the stuff for the bind ID and other file system things. But yeah, so basically for that emulator called Melange, that is the only like Brew mobile emulator out there, and it doesn't support sound. So it's like, that's already really, really rudimentary. It's been that way for a while because, well, there's only a single developer. So I think if there's one thing to move forward on that side of the preservation spectrum, like with the Easy Web games and the Brew platform, I think emulation definitely should be something that should be focused on by other knowledgeable users, because we don't want this one guy to do it alone on his spare time, which now with all these other all these other things on the different carriers, it's like he can't focus on that emulator anymore.
I mean, as with everything with game preservation, unfortunately, it feels like it's been left to the hobbyists to figure out everything that the companies that own the IPs should handle. And since hobbyists are inherently a niche thing, like when you're into this type of stuff, like there's not going to be a lot of people who have the technical prowess or interest. Like you need both. You need both of those things to make this happen. You need people who are technically inclined enough to be able to troubleshoot these issues with whatever it is you're trying to preserve in gaming. And you also need the interest. And while there's plenty of technically inclined people in the gaming sphere, obviously, otherwise you wouldn't have people who figure out NES emulators and Super Nintendo emulators and Genesis and, you know, the, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the MAME, you know, the arcade emulator and stuff like that. You wouldn't have all that. However, feature phones is extremely niche. And so if you don't have the interest, it's going to be hard to find people who can do this. So the fact that you even have one person is amazing, but unfortunately it seems like a lot of the responsibility for that is on their shoulders solely because no one else has taken the time to do it. And it's because it's hard and you have to be interested in it. Anyway, I mean, my hat's off to everyone who's working on this because it really is a labor of love, and it's crazy to see that while you all are having, you know, your personal lives to deal with between work, between school, between everything going on, you still were able to find time to get all of this done throughout the course of the year. And I want to bring this around before we wrap up to once again, you know, kind of not as a plea, but as a reminder to my listeners why this is important, why game preservation is important, and why this specifically is important to game preservation. And as we've over the last hour or so, when we've discussed it, it's like there's so many games and important things that are from major iconic series that don't get the attention and the love that they deserve. And if it wasn't for people like Cosmo here and Nioya and all of the users that they've mentioned over the course of this episode, you might not have even heard of these. That's the crazy thing. Like the only one I had ever really heard of, like I understood there was like, you know, Japanese feature phone gaming in general over in, you know, just in Japan, and they had exclusive things that we did not get and blah, blah, blah. I understood all that. But the only one I had ever heard of prior to meeting both of you was the Kingdom Hearts Recoded or Kingdom Hearts Coded. And that's the only reason I know that is because I looked into the Kingdom Hearts series and I wanted to see what else was available. And so there's major portions of our game history, and in turn, like game history is in essence a large chunk now of human history. It's affected human lives for well over 40 years. It's important to preserve this stuff. And it's really wild to see some of the methods that you all have to do to get this to work, as well as some of the methods that the developers who made the games had to do to get the games to work. I'm still like in a mind trip over the fact that they stored game code on image files. Like it just confuses the ever loving shit out of me, but it's absolutely incredible. So I want to throw this back over to you guys as kind of a final little bit. Is there anything that we have not talked about over the course of this episode that you would like to go into? Any things that you want to shout out? Any parts that you think are worth mentioning and we just didn't get to? So feel free. I don't know who would want to go first because I don't know who has something, but if you do, shout it out here.
I would say that despite all the breakthrough we've made, one of the biggest problems is that we do know people who do have the games that we want, that we don't have a way of being able to legally pay for these games. Even if we want to, they're in the hands of people who don't want to share, which I can understand to some extent, but that's what makes this all harder. Even when we try as hard as we can to be as polite as possible to ask someone politely to help us preserve a game that we are not able to buy, it's hard.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean it's something you've been fighting. I remember even last year where you're kind of at the mercy of people trying to, like, people still view it as like almost like piracy, right? And that's why it's so hard.
Yeah, I because in Japan there was a recently, while this is not really related to games, but someone in Japan, a YouTuber in Japan, did go to jail recently for sharing footage of a video game or something that wasn't supposed to be shared. And even though that is kind of a bit far off from what we're from dumping games, it still is one of those things where it's like people in Japan take it much far seriously than we do. At least most people in Japan do from my knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, and that's got to make it that much more difficult. I mean, that just makes it exceptionally difficult. Like you said, it just trying to get people to help you with this. I don't envy that task.
There is one thing. There, if anything, there is one way to convince others to help you get the game you want. Basically, just rather than trying to make demands of like, oh, I'll pay you $1,000, $1 million. People have gone as far as offering $1,000 straight up front to people with the phones. But one thing is, these phones are very precious to people in Japan, much more precious than we may view our phones. But another thing is to show off how fun it is to play the games. Like, if you do somehow dump, like, let's say, Final Fantasy for the after years, you know, like, record footage of it and just show off how much fun you're having playing with it. And I guarantee if you show off how much fun it is to play a game that a game company that we all know is not going to go releasing the original format, they're eventually going to come to you and say, hey, you know, I would like to play that game too. Because it's worked, actually. I had someone with a mass collection of Square Enix games come up to me and ask me how to dump the games. I still haven't heard back from that person yet, but then again, soldering is can be a bit of a scary,
tedious task
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and this type of thing is a little bit of a scary territory for some people. But still, though, that basically go off with a more show how much fun it is to play approach.
Yeah.
At least that's the most kindest thing I can think of. I mean, you can be from my experience, sometimes no matter how kind you are, if some people are against preservation, they're going to tell you no. And that's hard to believe, but it's just the truth. I don't like it, but it's happened to me many times before.
I believe it. Cosmo, anything that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Yeah. I got like, what, probably two pretty quick. So first, interestingly, there's this thing called Aptly Archives, and they were collections of these Japanese feature phone games released by Hamster Corporation from 2014 to 2015 for PlayStation Mobile. And that's it's weird, it's very specific, but each of these collections somehow contains iMode game files. It's kind of like the same situation with Fly High Claudia, where it's like, why are these files there? You know? So
yeah,
basically one needs to get a license key from a game copy due to the PlayStation Mobile store encryption thing. So basically only 8 of these collections have had their games preserved. And the weird thing is, these collections, they're internally emulating the server that it was trying to download game files from. So some people had to make some modifications on the files to get these games playable on emulators. So as I mentioned before, using a memory hunter, he made a local server so the game files could be downloaded to the Scratchpad files. So they weren't really downloaded, they're just emulating a server. So it's very weird. But we were able to get some games preserved from those collections, like City Connection DX and even Burger Time. So that was that's a little like a side tangent there, but I think that's just another cool way that some games were archived. And also I want to give a shout out to one, well, I've already shouted her out before, but LNRC, she's made something called Keitai Wiki. Keitai means mobile phone in Japanese. And basically it's an initiative where it's like one wiki and it documents the games, like the publishers, the games, and the methods that have been used to preserve them, as well as provide a little preservation tracker. A centralized space, basically, for Keitai game preservation resources. And that doesn't really exist. Like, I've written articles, yes, I've written stuff for HitSave, but it's like, ultimately, a lot of the things and resources that we're talking about are limited to that Coffee Break Discord server. And it's not really out there for many people to just read about. So I'm really glad that this initiative's going on and the wiki's up, and it's still a good amount of work to be done on it, but it's certainly an effort that's going to grow within the next year as more games get preserved and more people help start editing the wiki, you know, adding little things about their favorite games and I guess just resources for the games as well, because like on each game's page at the very bottom, they got like archive links to their store pages. and just links to footage, photos, things like that. So I think that's a really cool effort. And yeah, it's very recent, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it just, I guess, gain traction.
Yeah, she's been making a lot of effort.
Oh, yeah. And the go ahead, Naya. Sorry.
No, yeah, she's been making a lot of effort in that. And also most of these articles that do have that have been published about the IMO games back in the past, they are slowly disappearing. And also not everyone knows Japanese. Not everyone really searches in Japanese, as well as not many people know the existence of the games to begin with.
All right. Well, that I think is all that we really have time for then, guys. Thank you so much for giving me your time for this. This was a really wonderful conversation. I was very detailed, and I hope this paints a picture for my listeners just how much has improved since the last time we spoke. A lot has changed and a lot is on the horizon, which is awesome to hear. Specifically, we mentioned before, you know, the hopeful dumps of the Rockman games, as well as hopefully soon a Dirge of Cerberus one coming soon. We'll see. Obviously, it depends on what the community is able to do. But hopefully this will also help get more people involved in the community and it helps speed things along even more. So Cosmo, Nioya, thank you so much for joining me. This was awesome. So where can the good people find you online? And is, I mean, yeah, I was going to say, if there's anything you'd like to promote. Of course, there's something you want to promote. It's the Feature Phone Preservation Project. But where can people find all the information they need for that? So I don't know who wants to go first, but yeah, shout your stuff out and where people can get more information on this preservation project.
You can find me on Twitter or x.com at Rockman
it's Cosmo. It's Twitter. I refuse to call it the other thing.
At Twitter. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Rockman Cosmo. That's just Rockman C-O-S-M-O. I also have a website, rockmancosmo.weebly.com, and that also has other resources to contact me there. Feel free to just ask me about Japanese feature phone game preservation at large. Also big shout out to the Kavi Break Discord server. That's K-A-H-V-I-B-R-E-A-K. You can look them up, and they have their own Discord server. So if you want to get technically involved in this kind of stuff, you can always go over there. And then before Naya shouts this stuff out, I just want to say big thank you to everybody who's listened to these podcasts, spread the articles, because this has really done a big number to this. Like a lot of these new users that we were talking about, like Elena RC, for example, she discovered us through my HitSave article. So it's like these spreading the word has real benefits, and it's worked wonders this year. And yeah, just once again, thank you so much for everything.
You have a website? I had no idea. Wow. So you want to be new every day. I'm on X as well. No, I'm joking. I'm on Twitter. I am on Twitter and Reddit, same username. And I'm also on live stream Discord. And if you have any general information about preservation games or whatnot, no matter how dumb you think your question is, it's not dumb. You're more than welcome to ask any question regarding the preservation. Always more than welcome to answer those questions, because a lot of this is hard to figure out. Same name, Naoya Shinoda, Naoyashinota. It's a bit of a long, lengthy name. And, well, I don't have a website, but yeah, my DMs are open. Yeah,
not with that attitude, you won't.
I probably do come off as sarcastic. I apologize. It's not my intention. No,
I didn't take it that way at all. I was just making a joke.
Oh, no, you're good. I can't read jokes. No, but anyway, yeah, so... Yeah, and I'm also in the Kavi Break Discord, so you're more than welcome to message, ask questions, and yeah.
All right. And as usual for myself, you can follow me Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky and Threads and all that good stuff at Still Loading Pod over there. Also Twitch at Still Loading Pod. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, please consider giving it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever podcasting app you use, because it helps more people find the show and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And, you know, I like feeling warm and fuzzy. You can also support support the show by going to patreon.com/stillloadingpod for $1 a month. You'll get all the episodes like this one a few days earlier at a better audio quality, and also patron voting rights to help guide the direction of the show, which Naoya here will be a fan of the previous episode, which was on Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core, or sorry, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII. So that was the result of a patron poll, and that episode was with of course my buddy Colby over at the Switch It Up podcast. So if you want to help get more episodes like that and help pick future topics like that, please go over there. That's all at the $1 level. For the $4 level, you'll get everything I mentioned prior, plus access to 2 bonus mini episodes every month. And finally, at the $5 level, you can get everything I mentioned before prior, plus access to Still Bonding, which is my monthly James Bond podcast where me and a bunch of friends bond over 007. So that's all over at patreon.com/stillloadingpod. And yeah, that's it. That's all I got for you on this episode. Naoya, Cosmo, thank you once again for joining me. And this was a great time. And I hope to have you on again, whether it's for another update on feature phones or, you know, Cosmo, I owe you another episode appearance on just some other game, Mega Man or Mario or otherwise. And Naoya, the door is always open to you as well. We can find something out. But yeah, I would love to have you both on for something.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We really appreciate that.
No problem. It's always a pleasure. And with all that said, listeners, thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.